LosAmigos.com. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Brady Carlson, and in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. You can see the changes when the calendar turns from spring to summer. Gardeners head outside to plant flowers or vegetables, to pull weeds and enjoy the fresh air. Those who love to travel head for airports or highways in search of adventure and or relaxation. And for readers, it's a time to make a summer book list and dig into it. And as always, there's no shortage of choices for those summer book lists. Fiction fans could try Carl Hiaasen's new novel, Bad Monkey, bringing together satire and suspense in a tale of love, death, voodoo, and real estate. Claire Massoud's new book, The Woman Upstairs, is winning accolades for its portrayal of a protagonist whose version of events may or may not be what it seems. And Dan Brown is back with Inferno, in which his character Professor Robert Langdon has to crack the codes of a scientist fascinated by the works of Dante. Nonfiction readers, too, have a lot to look forward to this summer, from epic works recounting World War II and the Battle of Gettysburg to a skewed take on modern life from David Sedaris. Today on The Exchange is our annual summer book show. We're getting reading recommendations for the longest days of the year. And let's hear from you. What new books are you reading this summer? What author's newest offerings are you hoping to get your hands on? Or are you looking for a recommendation from our guests to find the perfect summer read? Call in The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or send a question or comment through our Facebook page. We have our booksellers back for the hour. Dan Chartrand, the owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. Great to have you, Dan.
It's great to be here, Brady. Thanks.
And Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. It's nice to see you again as well.
Thanks, Brady. Good to be here.
Now, first of all, there's that old story about the telephone operator who would unplug the phone at the end of every day because she was so sick of it. Do you two take books with you as you go on summer vacations?
I sure do. It's you can pull a muscle carrying all these books.
So it's good exercise as well.
Absolutely.
Well, some readers like to choose lighter fare in the summer, and others like to take some of that extra vacation time to kick back with something heavier that they wouldn't necessarily be able to read otherwise. What do you prefer, Dan, when you head out for summer vacation, you grabbing those books?
Well, you know, I'm like all my booksellers in my store. We kind of specialize in doing both, tomes, either fiction or nonfiction. But then we also like to, cleanse the palate with some lighter stuff. So it's always a balance. You're always balancing. People that love books, they don't have one thing that they do.
You're just looking for the right read, not necessarily the right weight or the right page number.
Usually when I go on vacation, which is not as often as it should be, I hope my wife is listening and heard me say that. But anyway, I like to take a mix of books because you never know what kind of mood you're going to be in. I'll take a couple of classics. I'll take some lighter stuff, some detective fiction, noir stuff. And then I might have three or four of them going at the same time.
I mean, just recently I paired up Rick Atkinson's Guns at Last Light, which was his third volume of his Liberation Trilogy, detailing the exploits of the American army in Europe during World War II. So that's kind of a heavy one. And then I was also reading at the same time Rainbow Rowell's Eleanor and Park, which is actually a young adult novel, which is kind of a light romance novel. So, we're very versatile.
Little bit of everything.
You got to cover the waterfront.
So for those listeners who are starting to put together their book lists and they want to add in a few lighter reads or something that's going to be a quick read or a page turner, what else do you have on your list this year? What would you recommend for somebody who wants something in that vein?
Well, if you like a sophisticated romance, Rainbow Rowell's Eleanor and Park, it's a young adult novel, but it really skews great for adult readers. It's this quirky story of these two young people who meet, who are kind of misfits, and it has the most amazing ending, which obviously I can't detail, but it's just, it could go any number of ways at the end, and you're left like realizing that, life has all these possibilities. So that's a great light read that I would definitely recommend to anyone that likes that type of book.
Well, not to say that it's light, but Dan and I both have Carl Hiaasen on the list, and it's not light, but it's so entertaining. I mean, I think there's a slight distinction there between, when you say light, you don't mean slight.
Right.
Carl Hiaasen, I've been a fan since, probably for 25 years. I used to It used to be I would go to the airport and pick up an Elmore Leonard to read on the flight. Then I said, well, I've read all those. What's next? I discovered Carl Hiaasen. And, you know, he's been writing great journalism and great fiction for so long. This is his first adult novel. It's called Bad Monkey.
Yeah, he was writing young adult books for a number of years.
He was very successful at it, too. But this is his first adult novel in 3 years. The last one, I think, was Star Island. And, you know, it's the usual mishmash of, funny cops and crooked real estate developers and hurricanes and drugs and bad behavior. And, you know, it's just a marvelous read. I would take this to the beach and then I would try to hypnotize myself into forgetting I'd read it so I could read,
so
it,
could
again.
Read it again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Jean-Paul, who works for me, said that he insisted that Bad Monkey be on our list for the summer reading program. He said Hiaasen's back on the adult side with a great novel. Some of the previous ones were like maybe a little bit of a miss, but this is not a miss, Jean-Paul said.
Now, Carl Hiaasen is from Florida, and he plays that into a lot of his books, including in this book. I always enjoy books that really wrap themselves into particular locations. For me, that makes it a little more fun.
He knows the territory very well, Brady. He's been a journalist. He was a journalist before he was a novelist, and he was. If you go back and reread some of his columns from the 80s and 90s, they're collected in a book that I think is out of print now called Paradise Screwed. It still holds up today. I don't know who these characters are that he's writing about, all these petty politicians and crooks down there, but, you know, it reads like his fiction. I mean, he's a great journalist and a great novelist.
As they say, sometimes you can't make these things up.
Exactly.
Now, Michael, I see on your big stack of books that you have sitting here in between us quite a number of novels, and one that you recommended that's on your list is by Dave Eggers, and he's back with, it's called Hologram for the Kind?
For the King.
For the King, sorry.
Yeah, this is a book that I actually recommended before when it was in hardcover, and now that it's just come out in paperback, you know, I think it's a great summer read. This is it's like Death of a Salesman updated. You know, it's really a novel about how men especially, but Americans in general are functioning in the 21st century. You've got this kind of sad sack middle-aged guy named Alan Clay who's in Saudi Arabia. It's a last-ditch effort for him to make a big commission so he can pay off his daughter's mortgage and maybe save what's left of his family. And they wait in the desert, and they wait, and they wait, and they wait. He's got a young team with him that go off and do their own thing. He's racked with self-doubt. It's a great, great novel. I think that that Eggers really captures, it's a cliche to say somebody captures the zeitgeist, okay? You know, I didn't say it. I just said it was a cliche. So, Eggers really has his finger on the pulse. He can, if you really want to read fiction about what makes Americans, and especially in business, tick in the 21st century, this is a great novel to read.
It sounds a bit tricky, though, to be able to pull off a book that's exploring some of these weighty issues, and yet you also described it as a great beach read.
It's a great beach read because, you know, it's one of those books where you say, oh, geez, this poor sad sack. What can happen to him next? You know, and that's good for the beach because it's a little bit of escapism.
Because you always want to find out what happens next.
That's
in these
true. That's
kinds
right.
of situations. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR is our annual summer book show. With warm vacations on our minds, we're looking at some of the best reads for the longest days of the year, from new biographies to trilogies and so much more. We're with Dan Chartrand of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter and Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, and we hope you'll join us. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. One of the big book series that we've talked about in past summer book shows and holiday book shows for that matter was the Stieg Larsson books, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and the books that came after that. Have there been, Dan, any attempts to try to create a new Stieg Larsson or, you know, looking overseas and trying to find someone who might connect with readers in this country? And if so, have they been successful?
Well, there's been quite a bit of publishing. The United States publishing scene has reached into the Scandinavians and pulled out a number of and there's a book coming out this fall, actually, called Alex. And I'm blanking on the author's name, but it's a similar type thing. It's, you know, page turner, very kind of rough and raw, like the Stieg Larsson books were. And so the U.S. publishing scene is constantly translating those types of books and trying to find the next Millennium Trilogy.
Yeah, it's funny because it used to be a truism in publishing that, you know, Americans would go overseas and they wouldn't really bring back novels in translation because they didn't think they would sell in this market. But, right. You know, with the Stieg Larsson thing, now they've pulled, you know, a bunch of, you know, noir thrillers and dark mysteries from Danish writers whose, you know, names I can't pronounce off the top of my head, unfortunately. But, you know, they're on our front table and these, you know, the readers of Stieg Larsson are also gobbling these up.
One of the other trends, Michael, that we talked about on these shows in the past is the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon, the E.L. James books, the racy novels. And are those as big a deal in 2013 as they were in 2012?
Well, 50 Shades was kind of a once in a lifetime phenomenon, really. It was like a perfect
storm. For a couple
storm.
Reasons.
Yeah, it was a perfect storm.
First of all, remember that book started as
this fan fiction.
Exactly. It came out of the sort of the internet tubes and kind of unleashed itself. So it's not really like a lot of the other what we would call erotica in that it was basically it was a ripoff of Twilight, and then she just plugged in some names that were different than Twilight. So it was converted from fan fiction to – so that kind of gave it a
but
boost.
But there was something about it that – certain some a lot of readers a ton of readers really responded to it. Random House had, like, I think the best year in their history, because even though it was self-published, then Random House came out with their edition and sold a zillion copies,
right?
And you know, then all the publishers came to us and said, well, if your readers want 50 Shades of Grey, they're going to want these six novels. And I said, well, they might and they might not. This
right.
might just be a once
it's hard,
in a...
It's hard to catch lightning in the bottle.
Exactly.
Again. Well, you mentioned a phrase that I want to come back to after a short break, Michael, and that is self-publishing. So I wanted to ask you about how that's changed what you do and the publishing landscape as a whole. We'd also like to invite you to share your summer reading recommendations with us. The exchange phone number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send an email with your recommendations, exchange@nhpr.org. After a short break, more from our summer book show. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
NHPR 919. Good morning. And NHPR would like to thank all of our listeners who support this service throughout the year. That includes our more than 18,000 members, as well as the more than 400 corporate supporters who underwrite our programs. Together, you keep us on sound financial footing. Thank you very much. More of our summer book show on The Exchange and at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, the Acting Secretary of Labor on Jobs in America today. Mostly cloudy today, chance of showers and thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty winds, small hail, heavy rainfall, and frequent lightning, highs upper 70s to lower 80s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from Stonewall Farm, a nonprofit working farm and education center, Chesterfield Road, Keene, hosting their annual Farm Made Ice Cream Social this Saturday, stonewallfarm.org. And the Lexus CT Hybrid with a combined EPA-rated 42 mpg. Actual mileage will vary. More online at lexus.com/CT. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Brady Carlson. Today on The Exchange, it's our summer book show. We invite you to share your favorite reads for the summer at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. Our booksellers for the hour sharing their reading recommendations are Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, and Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. And Michael and Dan, we close out the last part of the show with talking about 50 Shades of Grey. And for those readers who are maybe looking for something in that vein this summer, you had a couple of ideas that might work.
Well, there's a new book, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right. And just to say, it's not like 50 Shades, really. But, I mean, one of the most important themes in this new novel is also sexuality. It's a debut novel called The Yonalossi Writing Camp for Girls by a woman named Anton DiSclavani. And I hope I'm pronouncing all of those things right.
You did that so well.
Did I do that?
Well done.
Anyway, in 1930, a strong-willed, fiercely independent 15-year-old girl gets herself into some kind of trouble, and I mean serious trouble, which isn't specified earlier in the novel. There's twin narratives that lead towards the revelation of what it was later in the novel. But the Depression has just started. She's sent off to this exclusive equestrian camp, and then she's just left there. She doesn't come home. Her parents don't want her home. So you've got these themes of, the wealthy. You've got class. You've got sexuality. You've got a strong-willed young girl. It's a pretty good beach read.
There's a lot to it.
And
by the way,
there, yeah.
If you're intrigued about any of the books that Michael or Dan are mentioning today, we are posting their recommended reading lists at our website, nhpr.org, so you don't have to try and say, what was that title again?
Yeah, Yonelasi.
Yeah, exactly. And how did he pronounce it? Dan, you have one as well that you wanted to recommend.
Sarah Connell, who is kind of our queen of all things genre in our bookstore, and 50 Shades is really a genre book. She's found this great book by Muir Lafferty called The Shambling Guide to New York City. And she starts her staff pick write up by saying zombies in New York. And basically the heroine of this novel is a travel. She works at a travel publishing company in New York City. But this New York City has this whole underworld of zombies, werewolves, demigods and sprites. And she's a human and she's like sort of shambling through this underworld of New York City, and this is one of Sarah's favorites.
Is that fiction or nonfiction, Dan?
This would be it is New York City.
We put
anyway,
it in the travel section, so I don't know.
We'll call this fiction for now. We'll call it genre fiction. But anyway, this kind of self-effacing, competent heroine is wandering through, shambling through the underworld of New York City in this book, and it's great. Sarah loves it, and she's been handing it out to all of our patrons. So.
Well, let's get a recommendation now from one of our listeners. Elizabeth is calling from Goffstown. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I am in reading and enjoying Sonia Sotomayor's My Beloved World. I know it's been out for a while, but I just thought it was I'm enjoying the cultural differences that she talks about, and it's really a great read.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. That's Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, Sonia Sotomayor, talking about her upbringing and how she came to rise up to join the Supreme Court. Has that been striking a chord with any of your readers, Michael?
Well, yeah, it's been, we knew it would do well, but it's been doing surprisingly well right out of the starting gate. It really seems to have struck a chord. A lot of people are buying it and reading it.
Dan,
she is one wise Latina.
You just had to say that, didn't you? Had to say that.
Political books, they sell well no matter what season it is. We started kind of spinning people off from the big people, presidents, chief justices, associate justices, into the people that surround them. So we have two books on our list, one by Michael Golay called America 1933, and it's a book about the Great Depression, Lorena Hickok, Eleanor Roosevelt, and the shaping of the New Deal. So that's one that we're recommending. And then there's another great book called All the Great Prizes, by John Taliaferro, about John Hay, who was a counselor to Abraham Lincoln and was basically a fixer and a maker in American politics across the entire age of empire, all the way to Theodore Roosevelt. And that's a great book. If anyone ever read Gore Vidal's Lincoln, the fictional John Hay was the narrator of that novel. So he's a fascinating character. So we're trying to sort of steer our customers towards the people around the famous people. And that seems to be – there seems to be some interest in that now.
And John Hay, of course, has New Hampshire ties because he used to summer in the Lake Sunapee region at a place known now as the Fells. So that strikes a chord. What other memoirs are really touching a chord – memoirs or biographies, I should say on your recommended reads this year, Michael?
Yeah, I think both Dan and I have on our list a new memoir by Elizabeth Marshall Thomas called A Million Years With You, A Memoir of a Life Observed. Elizabeth Marshall Thomas is a local author. She lives in Peterborough, and among her many adventures, she's served on the Peterborough Board of Selectmen. But she's had more exciting adventures than that, too. She did anthropological field work with her family in Africa when she was just 18. She's been studying animal behavior all of her life, hidden life of dogs, tribe of tiger, about cats. She's written about deer, and she's written about people. She's a skillful observer, and she was untrained in a technical sense. So her memoir is really of a life well lived and well observed, and it's full of just fascinating stories about really 70 years of keen observation and good writing.
The great thing about Elizabeth Marshall Thomas's book is that there's always been this undercurrent in her other books that she's the amateur eye, the untrained eye that sees things that someone who's trained so finely misses because their training blinds them to it. She's finally getting at that directly now in this new memoir, and it's fascinating. I've always loved books like Jane Jacobs' Death and Life of Great American Cities because she was an amateur, and she came to it fresh, and she was able to say, oh, yeah, sidewalks are important to the life of the city. Well, Elizabeth Marshall Thomas did something similar beginning with her childhood in what was then Namibia.
Namibia, yeah.
And she was able to bring a real, just a fresh perspective to anthropological pursuits that someone who was trained to fairly well in that wouldn't see. So it's a great example. Her book is a great example of that, that fresh-eyed amateur making breakthroughs in a field that it's exciting to read that because you feel like you're there with them.
That's Elizabeth Marshall Thomas, A Million Years With You, A Memoir of Life Observed. And you said she had she's a New Hampshire author.
Yeah.
We have quite a few prominent New Hampshire authors with books out this year. Dan Brown is the obvious one, and we have a copy of his new book, Inferno, sitting here with us in the stacks in the studio. And no question that people are taking a look at that one, Dan.
Well, he's kind of he's our number one author, along with Joe Hill, who's another New Hampshire author. He's written a great horror novel called Nosferatu. And those two... they're probably the two most prominent New Hampshire authors, but then there's so many more. And the literary landscape of New Hampshire and New England is just packed with authors. No region has more authors than New England.
I think that's true. The thing about the Dan Brown book is, you know, you've got a main character who knows more than anybody. And almost immediately people start chasing him and shooting at him. You know, that's the Dan Brown plot. And sure, you can describe it, but can anybody else do it? Can anybody else sell a zillion copies? I don't know what it is about Dan Brown, but whatever it is, you know, it's unique.
And I love the fact that Robert Langdon is now back in Europe after a short stint in Washington, D.C. in the last book. Europe is where Langdon is.
He's really back in his element.
He should be.
It's a great book.
That's where the art lives. Yeah.
Now, when it comes to New Hampshire authors or New Hampshire poets, I guess we should say, Charles Simic has a new collection of poems, and I believe he was at Gibson's recently.
He was, yeah. Yeah, we were so honored to have him there. His new volume, it covers 50 years, if you can believe that. The thing about Charles Simic is, you know, I always think of him as the younger poet because, you know, in my experience, he's always been up on the stage with some of his elders, you know, Donald Hall and Maxine Cumin. But he's in his 70s now, and he's got a body of work that goes back 50 years. I'm just such an admirer of Simic, and this is his first real collected poetry. And he's a great prose stylist as well. Whenever he has an article in the New York Review of Books, it's brilliant.
His blog has been winning a lot of accolades as well.
He's got a lot of interests, and his political commentary, if you ever catch that in the New York Review of Books, I mean, it is savage and biting and humorous in the same way that his poetry can be. You know, he's a great observer.
If you've never had a chance to hear Charles Simic read his poetry, he is so witty. He is so funny. In addition to being, you know, a world-class poet, really someone who would be on a short list for the Nobel Prize. But he lives here. He's taught at UNH for years, and he's part of New Hampshire's literary landscape.
New Hampshire has certainly been singularly blessed with the quality of the poets that live here. I've mentioned Don Hall and Maxine Cumin. Now Sharon Olds just won the Pulitzer. She lives here. Charles Simic. You know, there's so many great poets. It's just it's amazing.
Well, let me ask you this. When you have the chance to bring in a Charles Simic, that's kind of a no-brainer. He's a known commodity. You know, when you win a Pulitzer Prize or you're named National Poet Laureate, you're going to bring him in. But these days, if a person who is sort of walks in off the street and says, "Hi, Dan, I have a new book here, and I'd like you to sell it for me, and I'd like to do an author event." Where do you draw the line about who has an author event and how you figure that out?
We recast our mission over the last few years. It's no secret that the book industry, the book business, the independent bookselling channel have all been under stress by, technological change. So we decided to recast our mission. It's not our mission to sell stuff. It's our mission to build community around the written word. That's it. That's what we do. So when someone comes in with their, what some people call self-published, but what we've begun to call independently published, because there's all these shades of gray. And really what it is new technology that allows people to get their intellectual property out. So whether it's short-run printing or e-forms of publishing, all these people are able to – everyone's able to be an author now. So our job is not so much to draw lines as to build community around the written word with those authors, those creators of intellectual property who want to work with us. So that's the only limit is, do you want to work with us? And we have ways to determine that are, basically – we have baselines of sales. We can tell who's going to work with us, who isn't. If you're working with us, we will throw everything we have – behind you to build community around your intellectual property, your written word, whether you're Charles Simic or whether you're Norman Phillips, who's just independently published or self-published a book called Throw a Nickel on the Grass, which is a lightly veiled fictional novel of his experience as an Air Force pilot in the Army Air Corps in World War II, going forward to Korea. He also was in Vietnam. He then became an art instructor in the second half of his life. He's retired from that. He's now 91, and he's begun his writing career. So there's these amazing stories out there, and it's not our job to say, oh, you don't qualify or you qualify. It's our job to build community around the written word,
Michael.
Pure and simple.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Dan is 100% right. I will say, though, that it's our mission to build community around the written word, but it is also our mission to sell books. We are retailers also. We have to make money or else we're not going to be here tomorrow. The thing about self or independently published authors is sometimes those are the most popular books in the store. The author's friends and family live in the area. If the author does his or her job right and we do our job right, those can be some of the best-selling books in our store. Two of our best-selling books last year were by local authors, Mike Pride and Mark Travis. Tremendous sellers. And when a community gets behind a book, it is like magic. And like as Dan says, building community is a central part of our mission.
But
also got kids in college, so I also had to sell some books.
But as you say, it's not simply a case of the author bringing in a few copies of the book and saying, go sell these.
Too often the author will say, well, I've done my job.
I
wrote the book here.
Yeah,
it's your job
right.
to sell it. That doesn't work.
That doesn't work. It's their job to be our partner in
building
that.
Often what we'll say is, sure, we'll take a few copies of your book. We'll give it a nice face out in our local author section. It's your job now to send friends and family down here to get it. Don't give your book away to those people. Those are your natural customers. Make them buy it. Send them here. Now, and if the book does well enough, we would love to throw you a party.
Today on The Exchange, it's our annual summer book show. With warm vacations on our minds, we're looking at some of the best reads for the longest days of the year. And we invite you to share some of your recommendations. Call us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email at exchange@nhpr.org. We mentioned early on, Dan, one of the books that was about World War II, and I wanted to also mention that since this year there are so many historical anniversaries, that one of the books that's on a lot of readers' lists, and I believe on yours, is a book about World War I, which has not gotten a lot of attention in the last few decades, but seems to be getting some as we see the 100th anniversary of some of these pivotal global events.
Right. The book that we like best that's sort of verging on celebrating the 100th anniversary of the beginning of World War I is a book called The Sleepwalkers, How Europe Went to War in 1914 by Christopher Clark. And it kind of details the very complicated ways in which Europe was just asleep and kind of wandered into World War I. It's kind of the same territory as Barbara Tuchman, but there's more source material available since Tuchman's books were published. And so this was the best of the bunch in terms of the reviews. And we've been recommending it highly.
The Sleepwalkers.
The Sleepwalkers by Christopher Clark.
What books on a nonfiction side, Michael, are you getting a lot of play out of that customers are seeking out, be it with an anniversary or otherwise?
We find sometimes publishers think that anniversaries will sell books. It doesn't always work. The nonfiction that is on both my list and Dan's is the third volume of Rick Atkinson's Liberation Trilogy. I think you mentioned this briefly, but Guns at Last Light, John Ladon, who works at Gibson's, is very high on this stuff. He's been pushing it on readers of history. He just thinks it's a great survey, a great book for helping people understand all the different details of what happened in the last years of World War II.
The great thing about Atkinson is that he has this ability to do 10,000 feet, sort of, okay, yep. Here's Eisenhower's view of things. But he also goes way down to the ground and talks about the experience of the average infantryman.
So here's what the people planning the battle are thinking, and here's what the guys who are fighting it are thinking.
Rick Atkinson's book is worth reading, if only for the description of the Battle of the Bulge in the Hurtgen Forest. It's the most amazing military history writing that I've ever read. He just gets down, and he's able to really give you the sense of the grit and the guy hugging the foxhole. But he's also doing the 10,000 foot. Very similar book is, and I'm not going to pronounce the author's name correctly, but Alan Guelzo, who is a longtime professor at Gettysburg College, knows the Gettysburg landscape infinitely. He's walked it over and over. He's done a very similar thing with Gettysburg, The Last Invasion. Again, giving you the general's eye view, but also giving you the sense of desperation that, for instance, Reynolds' cavalrymen had as they were trying to hold the position at the beginning of the battle. So, yep, great view up top, but also down in the mud, in the mire. Both of those books, Gettysburg and The Guns at Last Light, do a great job of that.
We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll have more recommended reads from our booksellers. We'll also take more of your calls with great summer books. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and from Extreme Mount Washington. An all-new interactive winter experience from the Mount Washington Observatory coming in the spring of 2014, extreme.mountwashington.org. And Bonafide Green Goods in downtown Concord, now featuring Safe Coat paints and non-toxic sealers, environmentally responsible, sustainable, and non-polluting. BonafideGreenGoods.com. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
What people say in the public square is important for citizens to know about.
Which is why you turned to NHPR and Josh Rogers, senior political reporter.
I do my best to pay attention to what public officials say and do, to hold public officials to some account.
New Hampshire's newsroom, covering New Hampshire's political news. NHPR and NHPR.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Brady Carlson. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we'll be discussing the Supreme Court's decision on same-sex marriage, which is expected later today. Email us your questions before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9 for The Exchange. Today, it's our annual Summer Book Show. We're looking at some of the best reads for the longest days of the year, fiction, nonfiction, and everything in between. We hope you'll add your two cents into the mix at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. In the studio is Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, and Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. Just before the break, we were talking about books on Gettysburg and World War II, and since we're talking about books related to war, Michael, you had a recommendation you wanted to share.
I sure do. There's a first novel that's just come out in paperback by a man named Kevin Powers. He's an Iraq Army vet, served in 2004-2005. It's his first novel. And it's a story about two young soldiers trying to stay alive. And I'm not kidding when I say – I'm not given to hyperbole. But you know how they – now in high schools, they teach Tim O'Brien's The Things They Carry to teach the students about Vietnam. They very well – in 20, 25 years, they might be teaching Yellow Birds to teach the students about Iraq. It's a very powerful novel. You know, I just think it's great summer reading. It's very intense. It's going to, you know, naturally, because of the style, it'll remind some people of Hemingway. It might remind others, because it's very intense, of Cormac McCarthy. It's not as stylishly unique as Cormac McCarthy, but it's just a great story. I think pretty much everybody interested in what war is like should read it.
And a reminder that all of Michael and Dan's recommendations are going to be posted on the exchange page of the website, nhpr.org, so you can find them there. We just got an email from Sarah in Freedom, New Hampshire. She recommended Abide With Me by Sabin Willett. She says it's a retelling of Wuthering Heights set between small-town Vermont and Afghanistan. She says the author is from Natick, Mass., and he's also the author of the Small Business Brief to the Supreme Court in Opposition to the Defense of Marriage Act. So I'm talking about tomorrow's show already. But Sabin Willett, I believe you said Michael was at your store?
He was, yeah, and he's got a great local following. He's a lawyer who has many talents. He's a good writer of fiction, and he's also been active defending people at Guantanamo. It's well worth a read. It's been very popular here.
Let's take a call from another of our listeners. Mark is calling from Elliott, Maine. Hi, Mark. You're on the exchange. Hi, Mark. Are you there?
Hello, sir.
Hi.
A couple books to recommend. One just came out by Exeter author Phyllis Ring.
Phyllis Ring?
She's a local author. She's great. I think she has another book coming out very shortly.
It just came out.
Yep.
Snow Fence Road.
And that one's probably going to get some play in your neck of the woods, Dan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. She's a very important local author for us.
And what was your other recommendation, Mark?
The Universe Within Us by Jane Harper.
And what's that one about?
Developing virtues, it's a her journey looking for spirituality and how others may look at that.
Well, thank you so much for those recommendations. The exchange number again, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Dan, do you find a lot of readers are looking for, say, self-improvement books during the summer, or is that for other times of the year?
Yeah, probably more for other times of the year. There's definitely an uptick around the new year.
People are looking for books. New beginnings.
And spring, yeah, right. But this time of year, people are looking for great reads.
Because we need a break from all that self-improvement we were doing earlier.
You can only do so much of the self-improvement. That's right.
Let's take another call. Mary Beth is calling from Concord. Hi, Mary Beth. You're on the exchange.
Hi. I don't have the author's name, but a book my husband enjoyed was Bob Fogg and New Hampshire's Golden Age of Aviation, which I believe is published by Peter Randall. Quite an interesting book about New Hampshire.
And that's an area we've been learning more about in recent years, is New Hampshire's role in the history of aviation. Well, thank you for that recommendation, Mary Beth. Appreciate it. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. I wanted to ask you both about books for younger readers, either for kids or young adults, because libraries having their summer reading programs, kids out of school and parents trying to make sure that they keep up with some kind of book in front of them. Are there books that that are really resonating with younger readers this year, Michael?
Well, yeah, I'd like to recommend a book that that I read and that our children's specialist, Isabel, read and is recommending to everybody called The Fifth Wave. It's science fiction and fantasy if you're looking for something for the kids to read after Hunger Games or Ender's Game. This is a great one. It's an alien invasion, not the way you've seen it before. The aliens don't fly down slowly in flying saucers and let us target them with our weapons and, you know, the plucky, bunch of underdogs defeat the aliens. It's not like that. Instead, they basically send an electromagnetic pulse from space, killing all of our gadgets. Then they drop some heavy objects down onto fault lines, creating tsunamis that drown all of our cities. And then, you know, this happens in the first few pages, so I'm not giving anything away.
Wow.
That's just the beginning of it. Then there's the bird flu that they sort of meld together with Ebola, apparently, and kill off like 97% of the rest. And then it's the fight of the survivors, among them some very interesting teenage characters who go up against, the monstrous alien forces. And who knows what will happen. But it's a thrilling read. I'd recommend it for young adult. I'd recommend it for adult. It's actually pretty good science fiction. It's very good. It's called The Fifth Wave, and Rick Yancey is the author's name.
Rick Yancey. Dan, yeah. You mentioned right at the beginning of the show that one of the reads that you had enjoyed most was a young adult book, and that's often the case. Sometimes they're just really compelling.
Some of the best writing right now is in the young adult field, and it translates both to young adults as well as to adults. We see a lot of crossover, not so much young adults crossing over to adult books, which is what we used to try to do, but now we see adults crossing over to the young adult market and reading their books. So it's an exciting field.
One of the authors that has always straddled that line is Neil Gaiman, and he has a new book out this year.
It's on both of our lists, and I think it's an instant classic. It's called The Ocean at the End of the Lane. It's about a man who's about my age. He's in his 30s. No, he's in his 50s. He goes back home to his Sussex country town to attend a funeral. He's inexplicably drawn to this farm at the end of the lane. And there he discovers that a woman that he thought was ancient when he was a child is still living there, and she hasn't aged. And then all of a sudden, things start coming back to him. He remembers the grandmother, the mother, and his friend Letty, who was just a few years older than him when he was a child. And all of a sudden, how they confronted this monstrous evil, and he's forgotten about it. How did he forget? This, if you like the Earthsea trilogy, if you like Calvino, you know, the Cosmic Comics kind of Calvino, it's a classic fantasy. It in parts of it reminded me, Dan, of some of those Tom Bombadil stories out of Tolkien. Oh. You know, you have these ageless characters who have some kind of powers that are both like bound with the earth and also just magic. And
the way this book was written, it's kind of mythic. Neil Gaiman thought he was writing a short story, and then it kind of like kept growing, and he said to his publisher, well, I think I'm writing a short story, but stay tuned. It became this kind of novella, and it came from somewhere deep inside of him, I think it did.
This is really something.
When you say Tolkien's Tom Bombadil stories, that I hadn't thought of that, but there's something very mythic about this book, not just for the reading. Neil Gaiman has a very special connection to the independent bookselling channel, and he's one of us. He reads other authors. He recommends the best authors.
He supports other authors, yeah.
Yeah, so this is a great book to read if you're looking for something mythic.
And you can read it in one sitting. You don't have to, but really, I mean—
And you'll go back to it again and again.
I've gone back to it a few times. It's really just—
Like, what happened there?
Yeah, really instant classic. And sometimes people say fiction costs too much. You know, this is like $25. This doesn't cost enough.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you say, you know, somebody should really be willing to pay, just drop a couple $100 for this because it's that good. You know, how do we make that determination?
Now, often this is a field where the books are not something you can sit and read in one sitting. Sometimes they're called doorstoppers. Just they're gigantic books. And
sometimes people take the whole summer and read those. That's right.
Right.
Yeah, not this time. This is like not a doorstop. I think it's more what you do to block the mail slot.
Another book that another writer and another book that has that kind of mythic quality is Colin McCann. I'd like to talk about his new book, Transatlantic. Yeah. He obviously wrote the prize-winning Let the Great World Spin, which if I've read a better book in the last 5 years than that book, I can't think of it right now. It's just this amazing book about
National Book Award winner.
Right. Yeah. It's about New York in the 70s, and he creates this whole world in this book. And you actually are alive inside that world. He's an amazing writer. He's written a new book called Transatlantic. And here's what Mark DeCarteret, who works for me, just said very quickly about this book and about Colin McCann. And, of course, Colin McCann's Transatlantic. There is nobody combining both extraordinary craft and vision or far from simply writing any better today. That says it so well. Colin McCann is someone that if you're at all serious about your reading, you cannot skip over him.
Yeah, I think what he tries to do is he tries to out-historian the historians in a way, because what he's doing is he's using fiction as a method to get at what history must have been like when you were living it. Like, for instance, he gets into the character of Frederick Douglass when Douglass is a young man making a trip to Ireland in the 1840s. Douglass is no more than 30, I think. And it just gets inside his head. He makes you understand what it must have been like to be Frederick Douglass visiting Ireland in the 1840s. I mean, how do you do that? You know, but then it's not just a top-down approach with these characters that you've heard of. He also does the same thing with Senator George Mitchell, fictionalizing his trip to try to solve the troubles in the late 90s. But then, you know, it's not only history from the top down, it's history from the ground up, the social history, because in the second part of the book, he gets into the impact of these major historical figures' lives on the lives of characters that he's purely inventing, women mostly. From Lily, the maid that first met Douglass in the 1840s, through all of her descendants, all the way up to when Mitchell visits Ireland in the 1990s.
Yeah, it's seemingly disparate threads.
Yeah, he just weaves them all together in the same way that he did in Let the Great World Spin. It's not easy to do.
He's a remarkable writer.
He really is.
Let's take one more call. This is Krista. She's in Lineborough. Krista, hi. You're on The Exchange.
Hello. Well, I have two books I'd like to recommend because I enjoyed them both so much. One of them is a new book called The Significance of Vital Signs. I don't remember the author. It's about Chechnya takes place in the 90s after the wars, and it's about survival in horrible conditions with a terrible government and a war-torn country and the humanity coming through in spite of all those terrible outward things.
And what was the second book?
And the second book is The Garden of Evening Mist. The author is – part of his name is Tan. It takes place in Malaysia after World War II. Again, it's about people who suffered from the war, and now the countries are trying to – and the people are getting their lives back together.
Dan, you were nodding your head.
Well, the first book she mentioned, and I'm not thinking of the exact title, but something Vital Phenomena.
Constellation of
Vital Phenomena. Thank you, Michael. That almost made our list. Several of us have read it. It's a wonderful book. It's a difficult book about these three people coming together in war-torn Chechnya. It's well worth the read. So that's a great recommendation.
Krista, thanks so much for the call. As we start to wrap up the hour, what are on your own particular – as you start to put that bag of books together for your own summer vacation, whenever that may happen to be, what's the first book you're going to pull out of that bag?
Brady, my summer vacation is going to be in January.
Yeah.
Because right now we're in the middle of planning moving our bookstore in about 6 weeks. We're moving down to a big new development right down the street, and we are just out straight. I'm not going to have any time off this summer, but I am looking forward to what I hope turns into a trip to the Caribbean in January. Hi, Becky. How you doing?
Your warm weather eventually.
Yeah. I want to congratulate Michael because what he's doing with his bookstore is amazing. And it's a great sign, not just for Gibson's bookstore, but it's a great sign for the independent bookselling channel that entrepreneurs like Michael are stepping up and trying to serve their community in bigger and better ways. So congratulations, Michael, in advance. Well, but I'm very
excited. Don't congratulate me yet. We have to execute.
But that said,
in terms of my book bag,
it doesn't sound like you're going to postpone your vacation.
No, I am going on vacation in August. I use my bookselling staff as the sifters. I read what they love. It's a great little thing that I can do. They're my booksellers, and they recommend to me. And Stephanie Kuiper, who works at my store, has three novels that she's read that are in my bag, and they are We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves by Karen Joy Fowler, You Are One of Them by Elliot Holt, and The Last Summer of the Camperdowns by Elizabeth Kelly. So those are three that are in my bag, along with some great nonfiction books.
You're going to have plenty there. So are you going to be reading anything, in those few moments that you have during moving days? You know, you just sort of sneak a page here and there, Michael?
I hope so. A book to be named later.
Well, a big thank you to each of you again for coming in and sharing your recommended reads with us. It's always great to talk with you.
Thanks, Brady.
Thank you, Brady.
Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. And we've posted both Dan and Michael's recommended reading lists for the summer at our website, nhpr.org. While you're there, we hope you'll take a moment to post your own recommendations. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteers are Priscilla Malcolm and Alan Cohen. Our intern is Tim Camerato. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Brady Carlson, in for Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Brady Carlson. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the Supreme Court and same-sex marriage. Activists on both sides of the marriage debate have been awaiting decisions from the High Court on two major cases, one challenging